these drone strikes. I also think it's possible that Abdulrahman al-Laki was killed in what's called a signature strike, which to me is the most egregious part of the whole drone program. Because the United States doesn't have any actual intelligence on the ground in Yemen, they've taken to doing these signature strikes where they develop a pattern of life. And they say if people are in a certain region of Yemen or Pakistan or Somalia, if people are in a certain region and they're of military age, they could be anywhere from 15 to 70 years old, and they fit some kind of a pattern of other people we believe to be terrorists, then they become legitimate targets. So it's the most horrific form of pre-crime. They don't know the identities of the people that they're killing. They don't know whether they've been involved with any activity. They're killed for who they might be or they might one day become. And so for whatever reason, Abdulrahman al-Laki was killed that day. The message that was sent is that the U.S. will operate with impunity in pursuit of a small number of people, and even U.S. citizens can be killed with no explanation as to why by their own government.
Let me play the clip of Attorney General Eric Holder, who offered the Obama administration's most spirited defense of its policy, authorizing the assassination of U.S. citizens abroad, speaking last March at Chicago's Northwestern University.
It is an unfortunate but undeniable fact that some of the threats that we face come from a small number of United States citizens who have decided to commit violent attacks against their own country from abroad, based on generations-old legal principles and Supreme Court decisions handed down during World War II, as well as during this current conflict, it's clear that United States citizenship alone does not make such individuals immune from being targeted.
That's Attorney General Eric Holder, Jeremy Scahill.
Yeah, I mean, I want to, we've talked a lot about U.S. citizens, but I also feel it's necessary to point out that the vast majority of the people being killed in these operations are not, in fact, U.S. citizens. They're Pakistanis, they're Yemenis, they're Somalis, and you know, others. I think it's ironic that you have a president that is a constitutional law expert, and that you have, you know, this attorney general who is very well respected in the field of law, coming forward to put together the defense of the stripping of the most basic rights in our Constitution. I mean, the idea that you can simply have one branch of government unilaterally and in secret declare that an American citizen should be executed or assassinated without having to present any evidence whatsoever. To me, is a really, we should view that with great sobriety about the implications for our country. The idea that you don't give people the chance to respond to charges against them or to see the evidence against them should be shocking to all Americans. When Anwar al-Awlaki's father tried to file a lawsuit before his son was killed, before Anwar al-Awlaki was killed, challenging the government's right to assassinate him, CIA Director Leon Panetta, Defense Secretary Gates, DNI, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, all submitted briefs to the court saying that if the evidence was to be made public, it would threaten the security of the United States. And they hid behind the state secrets privilege. So their response to a U.S. citizen's petition to understand why they were put on the kill list was to say, we have evidence, but it's too secret to be, it's too sensitive to be made public. And that's essentially what it's come down to. And you know, I'm a believer in societies being defined by how they treat the least of their people or the most reprehensible members of their society. Anwar al-Awlaki said things that I find utterly despicable and disgraceful. And I think that there probably would have been grounds to charge him with some form of with some kind of a crime. His lawyers have never contended he's an innocent man or he's this noble figure that should be held up. He called for the killing of cartoonists who had drawn the Prophet Muhammad, listed specific names of people. He did things that are offensive to me and should be offensive to all humans. But that itself is not a death penalty case. You know, you have to look at how you treat people that you despise and what access do you give them and what rights do you give them in a society. That defines who you are. Just like when a president is in power who you support or maybe you voted for or you think is a great guy, your principles are tested by where you stand when they're doing things or implementing policies that you would have opposed if the other guy had won. And, so, and you know, we have a crisis of conscience right now in our country also where people are, it's like partisan lemmings just going off the cliff. If McCain had won that election, there's no way that you'd see polls 70% of liberals supporting drone strikes. No way. Obama has sold liberals a bill of goods. and has convinced them that this is a smarter, cleaner way to wage wars. And it's just not.
Jeremy Scahill, author of the new book, Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield. Tomorrow, we'll play highlights from today's first-ever Senate drone hearing and air part two of my interview with Jeremy on secret U.S. operations across the globe, including Somalia and Pakistan. You can visit our website to read an excerpt of Jeremy's book, Dirty Wars. On Saturday, I'll be moderating a discussion with Jeremy and Noam Chomsky at Harvard University's Science Center in Cambridge at 2 p.m. Finally, Democracy Now! Is hiring an online giving manager. Apply if you're passionate about funding independent media and have experience with online fundraising and database management. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berk, Renee Feltzer, Matthew Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield, Martinez DeRosa, and Nemo Allen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Donna. When I'm not hosting Jazz on the Air, the first Sunday of the month at 2:30, I'm bringing you the Concert Billboard. And this is your WUSB Concert Billboard for Sunday, April 21st. Wayne Newton will be at the NYCB Theater at Westbury. Naomi Sheldon and the Gospel Queens will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport at 3 p.m. Sterling Sachs will be at Vito's Pizza in Port Jefferson, 5 p.m. The Spirituality of Bob Dylan, Miles to Dayton Trio, Cassandra House, Robert Brewey, and Martha Trachtenberg will be at the Congregational Church of Patchogue in Patchogue at 7 p.m. The Brooklyn Folk Festival presents Tim Erickson, Ian Link, 4 O'Clock Flowers, and Jeffrey Lewis at the Bell House in Brooklyn, 8 p.m. Sessions 99 will be at a jazz brunch at Big Daddy's Massapequa. The King Cobras will be at Big Daddy's 6 p.m. The University Cafe welcomes James Maddock, 2 p.m. Your concert billboard for Monday, April 22nd. Cat Webb will be at Zerzamin, New York City, 6 p.m. On your billboard for Tuesday, April 23rd, the Focadelis will be at Urban H2O in Yonkers. Looking ahead to Thursday, April 25th, Marshall Crenshaw will be at the Grey Horse Tavern in Bayport, 7:30.
This has been your concert billboard for this week. Tune in to WUSB each day to hear more about your favorite performers and where they're playing. Or go to the online concert billboard at WUSB.FM, which has a schedule for upcoming months so you can plan ahead. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM. And this week, we're asking you to give generously to WUSB. Call 631-632-6901 and pledge now. Thank you.
And it's 5 minutes after 6 o'clock. That means it's well overdue for Off the Wall. Thank you. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And this is the last of our fundraising shows. That's right, it ends. I believe it ends on Sunday. So this is the last time that we will be asking for your support in this particular slot. And I should point out, we've made the goal of the show every week so far. So it'd be great if we made the goal this week as well. But please, I know people are running to the phones right now. We have to wait for Finn to get back from his car because he forgot something. And Oh, I hear the door closing, so I think he's back. Oh, welcome back, Finn. I was just stalling for time while you ran to your car. Did you get what you forgot in your car? Okay. Did you bring any for me?
No.
Oh, that's how it is. Well, it's okay. It's okay. I was actually a little bit late, so I'm happy that Democracy Now! Ran late because I would have been late anyway. I had to get coffee down the hall.
Very important.
It is important. It gives me energy. It gives me, I don't know, sometimes I kind of lag a little bit, but this peps me right up. But, you know, it bugs me every time I go there. I'm not going to say brand names or anything like that, but what size is this? Come on, say the word.
Why are you asking me?
Just, you know the word, right? What's it called?
Medium.
No, that's, first of all, that's wrong. It's large.
Large.
Yeah, but what's the word they use?
Grande.
No, vente.
Vente.
Yeah, I don't even know why I know this. But the thing is, I listen to everybody because there's a long line for some reason. Everybody decides to go at the same time. And they all use that language, what they never use unless they're on that line. I don't know. There's four of them, right? I think tall is the first one. That's small. Why does tall mean small? I don't understand it. But everybody, they just obediently use that particular word. And I always say large. Yeah, I'm a bit of a dick. I go there and I say, I want a large coffee.
Yeah,
and they look at me like I'm speaking Greek, which, you know, shouldn't be a problem.
I'll just say coffee.
Wait, that's even worse because you have to sort of describe it a little bit.
Well, usually I say a large coffee. I don't think large is...
hot, cold, you know?
Well, it's always hot. I would assume that when people normally ask for a coffee that they mean a hot coffee unless they specify otherwise.
Yeah, I made that mistake in the city the other day. I specified a large coffee. I forgot to say iced and I got hot.
Well,
but, you know, I didn't complain because it was my fault, but...
But that would be the default, I would think, would be a hot coffee.
Yeah. But, you know, an iced coffee is a lot better for, you know, running down the hall and being able to drink it right away, too. But I just don't go for this whole lingo thing. And we do this in so many other ways, too. We have our little code words to prove that we're with the in crowd. We do that online. We do that offline. And I'm always the person that says, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be somebody who tries to fit in.
Right. But the problem with that is that eventually...
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, with online lingo, you do fall into that.
Give me an example. Give me an example of how I have fallen into it.
Well, I can't give you that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I can't give you that. But people do. I don't think I've ever actually written LOL, but I know people who
LOL what now? Yeah, okay.
I know people who've sworn they would never, ever write it, and they write it regularly.
I just cannot stand that. I can't stand memes. I can't stand these little...
Smiley faces?
I mean, you know, I'll do a smiley face online. I'll do a smiley face. I will not do a smiley face in print. People
okay.
do that.
Yes, they do.
And why would you say LOL? I think there was a whole Curb Your Enthusiasm about somebody who was saying LOL. It's like, why don't you just laugh out loud, for God's sake? So, yeah, it's all about fitting in and doing what everybody else does, which is silly. And, you know... It's social media. You shouldn't take it that seriously. I think we learned today, don't trust what you read on Twitter. You know, did you hear about this?
That is true. Yes, I did. Go ahead.
The Associated Press got hacked. Well, last week, CBS News got hacked.
Right.
But today, the Associated Press got hacked. Somebody got into their Twitter account. Oh, my God. How did they do that? They guessed the password. They found out the password. They social engineered the password. It's not hard to do.
What was it? AP1?
I don't know what it was. I have nothing to do with it. But... the thing is, it's not hard to do this because the front end of Twitter simply is a password. So you have the username, which in this case was AP. I'd like to know how they got a two-letter username. I kind of like to know that.
They're special.
Yeah, I guess. Well, we shouldn't complain. We've got 2,600, so that's
password was
AP1, too.
Probably.
It might have been. It could have been. You're right. Yes. Could have been anything. But the point is, once you get that password, you're in. It doesn't matter what kind of software they run locally. What matters is that all you need is that password, then you can tweet away. Now, unfortunately, the folks who did this didn't have the style down. They didn't know that when you say breaking, it's supposed to be all caps. They didn't know to refer to Obama as President Barack Obama instead of the way they said it. So right away, things stood out. It's like when you get one of those notes from your bank that's filled with misspellings in email. You know, it's like, take the time to at least get the grammar right.
You know it's not from your bank.
But apparently, you know, they did it very quickly. It was obvious to people who pay attention. It wasn't so obvious to a lot of others. The stock market plunged. As soon as it was announced that it was a joke, it went back up. And the announcement was that the White House was attacked and Obama was injured or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't read the actual text of the thing.
Not very funny. Not a funny joke. Yeah. I would have done something a bit more subtle than that.
Mm-hmm. Such as?
Like the stock market is plunging. Something like that.
And that would have, of course, sent the stock market.
Well, it wouldn't have been untrue because I would have said it, right? And then the stock market would have plunged hearing that.
Like
and then it would
dollars.
Be true. It would be, yeah. Life imitating tweet or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, this happened and people believed it, and you should never believe things that you read on Twitter. Now, a great example of this is what happened last week. Now, last week, oh my God, what a week this was.
yes.
It had an effect on me, the whole incident to start with. I was depressed for most of the week just seeing. The after effect of that horrible action last Monday.
Sure. Yeah.
And I guess I wasn't expecting it so much, but I you know, it's sort of like innocence being attacked and people just gathered to watch this historic event that takes place every year and to have it just destroyed like that. And I just hope that it's not destroyed forever, that people will come back and not be all paranoid and filled with surveillance everywhere. And then seeing the reaction to that, I guess had a lasting effect that I wasn't expecting. But then after that, just watching all of the reaction to the pictures. First of all, getting the pictures so quickly and figuring out who was behind it was very interesting to watch. And then seeing what happened after that with the chase, with the shootout, with the lockdown. Really crazy and went on for days. But one of the things that happened in social media, my God, my pen seems to have exploded. My hands are all covered with ink now. Why'd that happen? Ugh. All right, I'm sorry. So one of the things on radio that you just don't see, one of the things that happened, if you read social media or if you read the comment boards on various news sites, mm-hmm. you saw that these guys were identified long before they were identified publicly.
Correct.
Yeah, and...
so were lots of other people.
Actually, Finn, incorrect, because the name Mike Mulugeta...
Well, the names are incorrect.
...and Sunil Tripathi were the two names being passed around. Now, Sunil Tripathi is this Indian guy who went missing last month in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who Mike Mulugeta is, but he was supposedly the guy who was shot and killed, the older of the two. And this was not on the media. It was not being reported anywhere on CNN or Fox or NBC or anything. But if you read the comments, everybody was saying, no, these are the guys. They're covering it up. They're not giving out this information. And then if you put these names into Google, you got tons of responses, every single one saying, yeah, these are the guys. These are the two guys. Obvious who they are. It spread like wildfire. But
yes.
It wasn't true. It was false.
But the visuals were correct, and I believe the visuals were picked up, or at least some of the visuals were correct. I believe the visuals were picked up by
what do you mean
internet
by visuals?
Watches. These photographs. Mm-hmm.
The photographs, yeah, the photographs were correct. But, you know, right. It's not hard to find people who look like that.
That is correct.
Yeah, and that's apparently what people did, and it started spreading, but there was no actual confirmation. And can you imagine... What that family, the poor guy who's missing, went through.
Right.
Thinking, not only is he missing, but now he's a terrorist.
Is he still missing?
I believe so.
Okay.
And, you know, if he wasn't missing, or this other guy, I don't know, this Mike guy, must have been going through hell as well if he was being fingered as the person responsible for it.
Sure.
And other people were as well. Of course, we had the Post do their usual bang-up job of identifying the wrong people. And all sorts of horrible things like that. And that is an indication of the mass media getting it wrong. Yes, they do get it wrong. It's not just social media that gets it wrong. But the Post is like, okay, what happens if you give basic, just plain Twitter people or social media people a newspaper with no accreditation whatsoever? That's what you get. You get the New York Post.
Right.
So
it's the race to get the news out and attempting to be right. No doubt they were mm-hmm. attempting that. but kind of stabbing in the dark very often and going with information that is not verified.
But, you know, that said, the mass media had their fair share of screw-ups as well. I mean, yes. I was watching, and this is great because through my Canadian dish, I can get Boston TV stations. It shouldn't have to be this way. I shouldn't have to get a dish imported from Canada and have all these schemes going on just so I can watch that among many other channels. But Boston, Seattle, those are two cities that I have full coverage of. And I was able to simply see what was going on live. Everybody should have this ability. I mean, you could do it online, yes, but it's kind of crappy, kind of choppy, and also it's prone to being controlled one way or another by your internet provider. But I was able to just go from four different channels over there, and they were reporting things that were simply not on CNN. For one thing, that the first suspect was killed. It took CNN something like 3 or 4 hours to mention that. Instead, they showed a naked man being put into a squad car. You see, this was a
yes.
naked man,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I was watching this, and there is okay, there was one guy who was killed, there was one guy who was on the run, and there was a naked man. That's three people, you know, and nobody was explaining who the third person was. I
and
had to
Mike.
Find out.
And
Mike and Sunil, those guys who weren't even being mentioned at all. That was irrelevant, but you know, it took. Many, many hours for the stories. They weren't even watching each other. They should have been paying attention to other news outlets and sharing information. They were not doing that. And that just led to all kinds of conflicting stories and allegations of cover-ups and things like that. So you had that. You had all kinds of mayhem and craziness. Then you had the lockdown. What do you think of the lockdown?
Well, you know, I think that the... clearly, I think that certain reporting is accurate after the fact, obviously, which is, for example, that the police were clearly, the FBI and the police were clearly soliciting help from the public. And I think they did the lockdown because they weren't quite sure what was actually going on at the time and thought there was imminent danger to people. And mm-hmm. clearly the point of the lockdown was to... If any of them were going to be moving, they'd be the only ones out.
I think, you know, it seems absurd and bizarre to lock down an entire city looking for one guy. But I think if you asked around, the vast majority of people would have said, you know what, we're staying inside. We're quite happy to be locked down on a day like this.
And that's how it seemed, right?
That is how it seemed. So, you know, I'm not going to go out there and say that they screwed up, they did a bad job, or even that the FBI missed the ball on finding the people in the first place, because we don't know exactly what was going on. We'll find out more. But in this particular case, it seemed like this is what the best move was, even though it was a crazy type of a scenario to even be dealing with.
Right.
What bugs me is the fact that we don't take other horrible crimes as seriously, and that something like the Newtown shooting is not treated with the same gravity as this. How is it any different? How is it any different what these guys did to, say, Columbine? All right. How is Columbine not an act of terror, but this is? Just because they're Muslim, just because Islam might have something to do with it? First of all, you know, I've seen a lot of reports that, yeah, these people were from Chechnya or Dagestan or whatever, which, by the way, it's the Caucasus. Is that how you say it? The mountains there?
The Caucasus.
Where the Caucasians come from.
Right.
It's all throughout. They're looking for dark-skinned people. You know, these people are the epitome of Caucasian because
right.
that's where they're from.
They're literally Caucasian.
Literally Caucasian. And just no one was getting that. And yeah, we're still looking for Arab-type people.
Well, I think that's your trigger right there. I think that the hint or the insinuation of foreign nationals being mm-hmm. involved in some manner is what makes all that happen.
So if the Columbine guys were Arab or maybe a Muslim, then it might be a terrorist act.
Right.
If the Newtown shooter, if that... The lunatic in Arizona who shot a congresswoman and,
right.
and killed a bunch of other people, was that classified as an act of terror? That's political, for God's sake. If you subscribe to the notion that terrorism has to be political in nature, how much more do you need than that?
Yeah, it absolutely is terrorism. Mm-hmm. But whether or not it was officially declared so, I don't recall that.
I just think that anytime you have a lot of people living in fear, as many people do these days, that is a form of terrorism.
Sure.
And we see that constantly with the way people are afraid of mass shootings and all kinds of other things as well. Yeah, this was a bomb. This was different. This is the kind of thing that happens all around the world every day, unfortunately. Other than that, not much of a difference.
No.
I think, you know, a weapon that can fire 30 rounds in a couple of seconds or less is a weapon of mass destruction just as much as something you put together with whatever it is you put these things together with. And the reason we don't see as many of these things, we talked about this before, it takes effort. It takes some degree of commitment to construct one of these things. Right. Whereas you have a gun in your pocket and you get angry, bang, that's it. You know, it's right there. It's a one-piece solution as far as eliminating your problem.
Clearly they had plenty of guns as well.
They did, but they didn't use them nearly as much. They, in the shootout, obviously they did, but they didn't use it for the initial terror thing. But yeah, obviously that's a problem as well. And that's, I guess they're looking into how they got those. But, you know, the other thing that happened, well, first of all, there was also that, people are forgetting this, that fertilizer plant explosion.
That's
you
right.
Know, what a week. Oh, my God. You had the bomb, you had the ricin letters, I'll get to that in a second, mm-hmm. and then you had the fertilizer explosion. Now, it's a horrible thing, and first of all, they were reporting something like 60 people killed. Turned out it was only 15. I don't know how. You saw the video of, mm-hmm. of the poor kid who lost her hearing for temporarily, I hope. Her dad was filming it from a car, from a distance, it looked like. And then, bang, the thing went up. And they say it was just like nuclear Armageddon. It wasn't, folks, just like nuclear Armageddon. Believe me. It would be very different. But it was really something else.
It was a massive, massive explosion.
Now, the massive explosion happened because there was a fire right. in the plant. Okay, you know, accidents happen. But I just think it's weird how we're kind of forgetting about it. We're not really looking into it. This happened maybe not in the town of Waco, but an adjunct to Waco, very close to Waco. Mm-hmm. And it happened 20 years almost to the day. I think it was one day short,
one day off
of the fire that took out all the people in Waco. Mm-hmm. And how did they take out Oklahoma City? Fertilizer bomb, fertilizer plant. You know, how did that fire get started? That's what I would like to know, and no one seems to be talking about that.
Right.
Just seems like an awfully odd coincidence that would happen
well, a lot of things
on that day.
Well, it's the same thing with the JFK library, too, right? Immediately, that was another misreport.
Yeah.
That an explosion had occurred, whereas, in fact, it was a fire.
Yeah, well, fires do happen, and
yes.
Apparently that was an accidental fire, and they've looked into that. I've seen some reports on that. It was
right.
some kind of employee break area, and somebody left something on they shouldn't have. Okay, there's the example. But they still don't know what caused the fire at the fertilizer plant.
Right.
And I just think that's kind of suspicious that would happen there on that day or close to the actual anniversary.
Sure.
And especially during what a crazy week it's been. Then you had the ricin letters. Okay, so some guy supposedly sending letters laced with ricin to Obama, to a Mississippi a congressman, and the guy...
Republicans and Democrats, I believe.
I believe so, yeah. Equal opportunity. And the guy being from Mississippi, you know, Elvis impersonator. Well, guess what? He's been let go. Did you hear about this? I just heard about this on the way out over here. He was accused of sending ricin-tainted letters to Obama, other officials. He's been released from federal custody. Paul Kevin Curtis, who is an Elvis impersonator, I don't know why that's so important, but everyone calls him that.
I think it's crucial, actually.
That's what he is known for. He was charged with sending a threat to the president last week after letters containing the poison triggered security scares around Washington, but a preliminary hearing that had been scheduled to continue today was canceled, and he was released.
What do you mean he was released?
Apparently, judges can be bribed very easily. No. It's just a joke. Now, there's a bond attached to his release, but the conditions of the bond are under seal at this point. That's according to his attorney. His attorney said her client had been framed by someone who used several phrases Curtis likes to use on social media. Again, we come back to social media. I do believe that someone who is familiar and is familiar with Kevin just simply took his personal information and did this to him. It is absolutely horrific that someone would do this. You know, it's...
This is getting very strange.
It is getting very strange. Now, his lawyer said he's an activist who's passionate about organ and tissue donation. And she says, I have a client who's not only guilty, he's truly 100% innocent. Hopefully, if you're not guilty, you would be 100% innocent. And she acknowledged that he has a history of some mental issues, but said they are not severe. Well, okay, welcome to the club. You know, there's more to the story, obviously. They let the guy go. What's going on here? So that means that the guy who did it is still, or the woman who did it is still out there.
Does the other guy still have three first names?
Everyone down there has three first names.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, what a week. All kinds of craziness happening. And it's not over yet. The remaining brother is now being interrogated or questioned in his hospital bed. And supposedly there have been no connections to any other groups, if you believe him. And you know, basically, I kind of believe the evidence where these guys obviously didn't know what they were doing. You know, they shoot a cop out of panic, apparently. They carjack this other guy and run to ATMs and try to take out money.
Right.
And they don't seem to know how ATMs work either, because they tried to get money out, got to the maximum, then went to another ATM and tried to do the same thing. They talk to each other, folks. You can't just go to another ATM and take out the daily limit there, too. So they kept trying to do that. They let the guy escape. They bragged to the guy, or at least the younger brother bragged to the guy, saying, I did that. I did the Boston bombing. And they stuck around, and they didn't cover their faces. There were so many things they did wrong if they're going to be bona fide terrorists. They were amateurs. It was basically college kids not knowing what they were doing, but clearly doing something truly horrible. It's not the dire international conspiracy against America that the right wing wants. Now, but leading the charge in that, of course, is our Congressman Peter King from right here on Long Island. Embarrassingly
enough,
his
position has shifted east. Isn't that correct?
What do you mean? As he represents this area now,
pretty close. Yeah,
really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he sees the attacks in Massachusetts as a wake up call to local law enforcement authorities to increase their surveillance and awareness of potential terrorists. Mm-hmm. Police have to be in the community. They have to build up as many sources as they can. They have to realize that the threat is coming from the Muslim community and increase surveillance there. We can't be bound by political correctness, he says. I think we need more police and more surveillance in the communities where the threat is coming from, whether it's the Irish community with the Westies, which is an Irish-American gang in New York City. Did you know about the Westies?
Yes, I do.
Really?
Yes.
We'll talk after the show. Or the Italian community with the mafia. He used the M word. You're not supposed to do that. There's a code, you know?
And Peter King, who was, you know, of course, a big supporter of one of the largest Irish gangs, which you could be a supporter of or not, the IRA.
The bank people. Yeah, yeah. They always are trying to get me to open an account with them. Yeah. Okay. And also the Muslim community with Islamic terrorists. He was awfully quick to jump on this, awfully quick to call for surveillance of an entire group of people. Why not just, you know, survey all males, you know, all people of a certain age? Because you'll find most of the threats are coming from there as well. You know,
right.
You can try and generalize as much as possible, but you're not going to learn anything, and you're just going to basically categorize a whole bunch of people in a particular way. We've seen all this before. We've seen it so many different times. You know, where are you when there are the mass shootings? And we have all kinds of people that are real threats to society and kill all kinds of innocent people. Remarkably silent, you know. And that's the other thing that really bugged me last week is the Senate. What happened there with the gun control? You know, it was embarrassing. It really was. You heard about this, right?
Of course. Well, senators can be bought.
Apparently, yeah. Now,
dime a dozen. Apparently,
this apparently was the vote to strengthen background checks for buying weapons. Something, the latest poll that I saw, 86% of Americans support this.
Right. It wasn't banning any weapons. Nothing.